Hey, After Buzzers, we are back here for episode 2 of Cults and Extreme Beliefs. We're going to be breaking down the United Nation of Islam. We're going to be talking about all of their crazy traditions, their tactics, their human trafficking. And of course, at the end of our episode, we have our celebrity special segment where we discuss any celebrities that have been, who are either still involved or have been involved in the past in this cult. And of course, we have some really exciting news for you guys, so stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hey, welcome back, guys. We're here for episode 4. Gonna break this down. This was a stressful and maybe a little depressing episode, as to be expected, but yet we're not gonna let that bring us down, and we're gonna talk all about it. I'm your host, Juliet Viver. I'm here with my lovely panelists. How are you doing, Taylor?
I'm doing good. Like you said, a little depressing, but this one was really interesting to me. They had a lot of, like, really interesting, weird stuff that we hadn't seen before, so I was really curious to find out more, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah.
I had never heard about this before, and I was like, why are you using the word Islam in your organization that has nothing to do with it? So I just have mixed feelings.
Well, I can't wait to hear all about it, Mina. Well, let's get into, your overall thoughts. And did you guys have any prior knowledge about this cult before?
No, I really had no prior knowledge at all. And I thought, like I said, I thought it was really interesting to learn all about it. I thought it was really sad, especially about how they don't believe in, like, Western medicine. And Shaquante's death, I thought, was, like, one of the most, you know, the saddest parts, especially since it was so preventable. I just thought that was so upsetting and just ridiculous. I don't like it when people just refuse, like, Western medicine, especially since we have so many different cures and, you know, vaccines and just everything now that, you know, we can prevent this kind of stuff. So it makes me really upset when that doesn't happen.
Yeah, same here. Like, adding to that, I mean, they even specifically stated that there's a 60 to 80% chance of survival with proper medical treatment of the condition that she had. So, super upsetting, you know? Yeah. Like, there was no reason for that. And the fact, additionally, that they would just try to brush her death under the rug instead of really giving her the proper goodbye or the proper respect at her young age for being part of that organization. The whole thing is so messed up on so many levels.
It really, really is. And as we dig deeper into this episode, we're going to be talking about all that and more. We're going to be talking about how just their beliefs, the history behind this cult, the propaganda, Royal Jenkins, and again, as I mentioned at the top, our celebrity segment and our news. So lots to discuss, but let's first talk about the history and the beliefs behind this. Taylor, so this started in Kansas City. And you didn't really have any prior knowledge about any of this, did you?
No, I didn't at all. And we've talked about in the past, kind of, especially I think with the NXIVM cult, how they kind of market self-improvement and betterment. And I think that was a huge, huge thing in this cult, especially marketing towards, like, the African-American communities. They wanted to make them entrepreneurs instead of being kind of brushed aside in the sort of, like, lower-class neighborhoods. Like, no one else was paying attention to them. And like you said, when you feel special, you're more likely to join and listen. And I thought that was such a frustrating marketing technique. Like, when you prey on such vulnerable people, especially, like, children and the elderly, it's just, like, the worst that humanity can do.
Yeah, as you're saying, they're easy targets, which is so saddening.
Yeah.
Because, as they said, what was really apparent in the episode, they were saying that they were investing in communities that no one else wanted to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they must be seen as someone that's just so great if they're willing to do that.
Exactly.
But as we learn, Mina, that is not the case.
Definitely
at all.
Not.
So that was really disheartening, which is to be expected. I think every week we talk about how disheartening this is, but we tune in and we know what's going to be put in front of us.
But it was like a different minority group than NXIVM, because NXIVM was all about women and this one was about, like, African-American communities. And it just shows, like, how you can really exploit those parts of yourself.
Right, and we have that commonality throughout the episodes. It's always they're targeting a specific demographic, a specific community, and always preying on just these poor people who have good intentions and then find themselves years later completely isolated. And that's actually one of their tactics, their fear they install fear by isolating you. And they had a bunch of different rules. The one that surprised me the most was the fact that they are not allowed to say hello. Mm-hmm. How hard do you think that is on a day-to-day basis?
So hard, especially when you've said it your whole life and they're just trying to change it when you're a 12 to a teenager. You can't, like, rewire your brain that fast. Mm-hmm. Me and Mina were talking about that one. That was just crazy to us, too.
It honestly feels like when you're implementing rules that are that strict, it's a way to create structure and power in a way where you know that you are the writer of these rules, and there are little things that set you apart from other groups. So you know that you're part of the in-group when you do these things, and I think it kind of adds to that level of discipline. Like, you know, even though it seems like such a little thing, like, oh no, this is a way to keep you disciplined. And not to make, like, a stupid analogy, but it almost feels like the whole Mean Girls on Wednesdays, we wear pink. Yeah. Like, this isn't just something, like, in a cult. This is something when any type of organization or clique or any sort of group tries to set themselves apart from other people, they do little things where they have their own coded language to set themselves apart from other people. And even the whole tactic of isolation, this is something that we don't only see in cults. We see this in abusive relationships, whether it be like with a partner and domestic violence. They always try to separate whoever is being abused from the family or from other people so that it kind of stays in this vacuum where no one else can find out. And I think that's how these groups, these organizations, these dynamics really thrive.
Yeah, very, very poignant. Throughout this episode, we follow Elijah and his brother and then a lot of people who've been involved in their lives. They were so sweet, I feel like, to follow. I really was touched by Elijah because he obviously is deeply scarred by everything that's happened to him, but he seemed like such a nice man. Just, he had a sweet soul. He was just, dare I to say, it seemed that regardless of what happened, there's some kind of good that rubbed off on him and have shaped him to be a good human being. Is that something you guys agree with?
For sure. Like, his temperament was so positive, and he's really trying to use his experience to kind of better the lives of other people. Like, he's really trying to, like, go to the FBI and make sure this doesn't happen to anyone else. And I just wanted to jump through the screen and hug him.
It's so surprising to me that as a kid you can know that all these things are wrong. I mean, he did talk briefly about how there was a certain point where he's like, oh, this is just the way it is. Like, this is normal. But for him to, you know, leave this organization when he's 21 years old and have that, like, sense of confidence knowing, like, no, this is not okay, this is not right, like, to really know that and to follow through knowing that, like, everything he's ever known his whole life is no longer going to be there when he leaves, like, that is so commendable and so rare. And, like, we can so easily say on the outside as viewers looking in, how come no one's leaving? But it's so hard to leave when this is your life, this is all you know. So for him to do that, I, like, highly applaud him, because that takes a lot of strength.
It wasn't something that was easy. It took 15 years, which is, you know, 15 years is a significant amount of time. However, he, as you're saying, he was 21 years old. You're not fully shaped at 21. You are an adult, yes, but there's still so much more to grow. And it's really, as awful as this all is, it's good to know that, well, there's still life after this. And I think that's kind of a message they were trying to push throughout, which I was like, okay, good. Some people are getting out, and as you're saying, Taylor, they're trying to take legal action, and hopefully the FBI is going to get involved into that and help out, just because there's so many cases. But we'll discuss a little bit more about that later in news. Guys, thank you so much for every week just tuning in. We've been reading your comments. Just so much conversation on our YouTube, on our iTunes. It makes our days just to know that shows like this are really impacting people who have been touched by cults and extreme beliefs, and that we are able to have this platform and just kind of talk about all the tactics where people were lured in and how they're building a life moving forward. And there's out of all this negativity, there is a lot of positivity, and that's really what I'm going to shine a light on, because it is so strong. So thank you guys so much for that. Again, if you haven't done so yet, please join in the conversation, because it's lots of great things are happening there on our iTunes. Just leave a comment. Make sure to subscribe. If you rather listen on YouTube, that's perfectly fine too. We keep the conversation going there as well. So leave us a thumbs up and a comment there. Moving forward, let's talk a little bit more about the cult and the way they operate. They operated mainly with Royal Jenkins, mm-hmm. who was seen as this god who also believed in science, which I thought was a weird a weird, I didn't fully understand it, but again, these people are really brought up into it, and so they don't really question things as much. Were you guys surprised by how the universe and him traveling through, him going through the sun, he was using that message as his way to preach?
It's like L. Ron Hubbard all over again, you know? They do this in Scientology, they do this in, like, certain cults. It's just, it's so crazy to me how someone can just say, yeah, I went and, like, I was, like, abducted, or I went on this mission and saw all these planets and, you know, I came back and I have all this knowledge. Like, I want to know, does this guy genuinely believe this, and is he preaching something that he genuinely believes, or was he just trying to become the leader of this organization and he really doesn't believe any of this, he just made it up? Because maybe in his mind all of this is accurate. I would really want to know that.
I mean, he says that he is the physical embodiment of Allah, so he is God himself. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty bold statement. Don't you agree, Taylor?
I definitely agree. I thought this was one of the stranger kind of happenings and kind of creations that we've seen, like with the Children of God and Jehovah's Witnesses. It drew a lot on Christianity, and this one, although there were aspects of like the Quran and the Bible, it was the traveling through the sun thing really mm-hmm. got me. I thought that was very odd.
Mm-hmm. Very, very strange. The fact that he went through the sun, I've never heard anything like that.
And they told them that their child was going to die 3 times and it was fine. It was very strange.
Very strange. But you know what? Just, I don't know. I don't know, apart from cults, I don't know any religions who talk about the universe and planets and such. Christianity, it was written, you know, has so many years behind it. And the Bible was written at a time where people didn't really have any knowledge that there was a planet Earth and a solar system and all these things. So it's interesting that they're bringing that knowledge, I feel like, into a new religion, because, like, okay, that makes sense, because that's something that's really missing in a lot of other religions. Like,
It feels modern.
It feels modern, exactly. And another way they're doing this being modern is with these conferences, and they are videotaping these conferences and sharing these conferences. And it's really interesting how they're able to use technology as a way to just put out all this propaganda.
Yeah.
Just was very surprising, but yet, again, this is something we've seen throughout. They videotape it, share it, and then it goes out throughout the country.
Yeah.
Yet, I felt like this was very, a lot of the places that I mentioned were really in the South, mainly. So I just thought that was an interesting location to start. Mm-hmm. Again, this episode, learned so much. I'm always thrown into a loop, like, wow, I can't believe these poor people had to go through this.
I agree. I found it interesting how they were creating kind of these new, I don't know if they call them churches, organizations, but they mentioned like New Jersey and Maryland too, so it feels like they're kind of expanding up to sort of the East Coast as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seems like their overall goal is to take over as many people as possible, right? Because one of the teachings that they had was, when you went to heaven and when you went to all these places where they were educating young men and young women, is that you were here to learn all our beliefs, and then you must go on to the world and share those beliefs.
Yeah.
Trying to get everyone under their wing.
Which is reasonable. That's every religion. You know, like every religion, you learn whatever the tenets of that religion are, and then a lot of those religions are like, okay, now we have to spread the word of God and, you know, spread this so as many people know about it as possible so we can grow stronger and stronger, whatever, and
agree,
show
but
people
I felt,
the right path.
Agree, but I to an extent, because I felt like this cult and other episodes that we've seen in the past, there's this idea of recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily living with faith and showing faith.
Yeah.
It's seeking out various people to lure them in,
mm-hmm.
Which was really, really predominant in this episode. Taylor, can you tell us a little bit more about Heaven and how that whole institution came about?
Sure. So Heaven focused a lot on the children and kind of the schooling type process that they had. And when Elijah was talking about it, he said that he and his brothers were told the day before mm-hmm. that they were going to go to Heaven. And
they packed that night. That night, you're packing your bags, you're moving out of your parents, 12 years old, done.
It's crazy how fast it all happened. And the fact that they could convince their parents that, hey, it's going to be so much better of a place for your kids. They're going to grow up learning all of this great stuff. They're going to grow into these great people. And when they got there, they learned that it wasn't really this kind of utopian oasis that they were promised. It was more of an army, in a way. They called the military there. They put them in barracks, and they were essentially soldiers who... I thought that their schedule was, like, the craziest part of this. They would wake up to go to school and work at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they didn't get home till 3. So that is 2 hours of sleep.
At such a young age, mm-hmm. when you're still... I mean, no, any human being should not be sleeping 2 hours a night. But especially at that age, you're growing. You need to be sleeping more. You need to have all the correct nutrients in order to grow as a fully human being. And we learn this later as well. They're deprived from food. They have to fast. They have to only eat beans and salad, which maybe for a few days, okay, could be healthy. But for long extended periods of time... This, to me, sounded like pure torture.
Yeah.
Do you guys agree? Pure torture here?
Absolutely. And
yeah, it just felt like we were living in, like, some Middle Ages, like, type of environment. Like, what is this? Like, there's a class of, like, peasants that are working. It's ironic because it's essentially slavery. Like, that's what human trafficking is. It's modern-day slavery. And the whole purpose of recruiting these people were to... self-actualize, live a better life, and you're literally going to disadvantaged neighborhoods and enslaving those people all over again in a system that's even worse than what they may be experiencing already mm-hmm. in their current neighborhoods, where there's violence and all these other things happening. This is worse.
Not to get too off topic, but we focus so much on the kids. I'm really wondering what this cult was like for the adults. Mm-hmm. Because we talked about, you know, the teenagers and younger, but we only really briefly talked to, what was his name? Derek Butler, who was mm-hmm. the father of the 11 kids. So I want to know what they were doing with the grown-up people.
Yeah, you're right. That's something I think that I would have wanted more explanation about, because... we know that Carl and Elijah's father was one of the first ministers. So ministers meaning that he would preach. But what is this? How much outside of the communities like heaven or educational systems? I don't really know what they're referring them to. That was really missing for me in the episode as well.
Yeah, I'm so curious. I want to learn so much more about what they were doing, like their curriculum for, you know, not children.
Right. Well, it seemed that these children, at least, they were... training them to have them graduate and work into businesses that were owned by this community.
Oh, that's true. That's probably right then.
But again, that was, they use the children and then they would raise them and have them do that. For someone who doesn't go to heaven, I don't really know. So if you guys know, please leave us a comment in the section below. We've had people reaching out. Last episode, we had a few questions that remained unanswered, and you guys were so amazing to go in there. We had someone reach out and give us such a sweet, long email that really, really touched our day. So thank you.
Thanks for sharing your stories. Like, I know that takes a lot of courage and bravery, and mm-hmm. like, we really appreciate you being vulnerable and contributing to the conversation. Like, it really, like, humbles us that you guys trust us with that.
It really goes a long way. So please, yeah, again, make sure to do that in our iTunes or our YouTube comment section. Let's move forward and talk a little bit about how Carl went to meet fellow survivors, and they all got together to discuss their experience and how they were going to use their experience to go present a case to the FBI. So this was a very touching moment where they were all sitting down having lunch. Out of everyone sitting at that table, who really struck you the most?
I feel like all of them did in different ways. I thought that Khalib, because he was talking a lot about his sister, mm-hmm. I thought that story, like I kind of said at the top of the episode, was just the most devastating for me.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of the girl who kind of was accusing her dad of, like, how can you do this to me? Like, how could
Ayana.
You? Yeah, Ayana was her name. That got to me when she's like, how could you do this? Like, it's not like I was 16, I was 8 years old, and you sent me out to this place, and... like, how could you not know that this was happening? And she was just so emotional. And I felt for her. I also felt for the dad. Like, you know, I can't imagine what it's like to be a parent and feel like you were so neglectful of your child that you didn't know that all of this was going on. Like, how did this happen under your watch? Like, you sent someone off. You sent your child off somewhere and, like, all of this happened. And they have to live with that emotional trauma. And you have to live with that guilt that they are now suffering from that. So
right.
that definitely...
That was really, really tough. But I love what Derek Butler had to say, though. You could tell he was so emotional hearing his daughter say that, and he was holding it in. But he was saying that, you know what? This is something I'm going to have to live with. I caused this pain within you, and I'll never be able to fix it. However, something I can do now with what I know now is help fix someone else's pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was such a beautiful message, is that no matter your path in life, you go through things, and there's certain things that you have to live with that you won't be able to remedy, but yet there's always hope for other alternatives. And he's using all this pain to enable to, in a way, to better other people's lives. So very great way to see life.
Yeah, 100%.
This was just, it was tough. And as they're having dinner, we also hear that Elijah is saying that it's his father's birthday, but he can't let him know happy birthday. And that's such a strange feeling to know that's your father's birthday, but you there's no point in reaching out because you are shunned and you've left the community.
Yeah.
This is something, again, we see a lot throughout. But this really, really struck to me because early in the episode, they were talking about how there's barely any communication. They would barely be on the phone with his parents. And the rare times he was on the phone with his parents, a soldier or someone was there to monitor.
Yeah.
Can you imagine having a conversation with your family and always having someone there monitoring you?
It's prison, like, honestly. It really is. And you can't reach out and tell them all the horrible things that are going on because it's so intimidating.
Right. How dare you complain if someone's right there next to you?
There's no way. It's such an intimidation tactic.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Something that comes up that was just really heartbreaking. But yet, taking a step back and looking at Derek Butler and just overall all these parents who didn't have a lot of notion of what is going on, they've had, for the last 15 years, 15 plus years, have had not a lot of communication with their son, which doesn't mean that they don't love him. It just means that separation and that attachment to the religion is so strong and it's so deep rooted that is one of the reason why people don't leave cults, because it's just so difficult.
Yeah, and they're just brainwashed into thinking that this is the way and this guy's the savior and this is the only way that we can be saved from death and, you know, eternal punishment. And it's like if someone says it enough times and is convincing enough when they say it, of course you're going to go that route. Because you think that you're doing what's right.
There's always, if you guys always listen to our after shows, there's always going to be a sigh at one point. Just like, okay, take a deep breath.
Like a special segment, Juliet sighing.
Before we move on to our other topics, I want to talk a little bit about, we're going to talk about Shankita's death. Their view on medicine, and then a few more disciplines we need to talk a little bit more about, which is math class. How was your math class experience, Mina, compared to their math class experience?
Honestly, I did not like math in high school, so I prefer their experience. No, I'm just kidding. honestly, like, jokes aside, I just, like, how can you do that? Like, how can you have a forum where it's essentially a detention, like using public humiliation? It's detention plus public humiliation. I just, like, that is, it's traumatic for a child.
And on top of it, it's physical abuse.
It is, because of the chest caps where they go up and they punch you right in the chest. I can't even speak properly right now because I don't even know how to describe my feelings that this is actually something that exists. Like, this is not okay. Like, this has to be punishable by law.
Yeah. The chest cap I thought was really strange because usually it's like you get, you know, slapped in the face or like you get like beaten, but like chest punching felt so, I don't know, it just felt really odd to me. It was a really weird choice, I thought.
You know what? Why I think that is?
Why?
Because no one can see your bruises. You're not taking your shirt off at work. You're not taking your shirt off in other places.
That's such a good point.
Wow, I never even thought about that.
Ugh. Right? They can't hit you anywhere else. That's for sure is going to be covered. Unless you take your shirt off, but there's no reason for you to.
Yeah, and if it's right here, like, no.
And then on top of it, that's where your heart is. So there's a, I guess there's kind of an emotional factor there, too. as they were saying, you know, you have the wind taken out of you.
Yeah.
You can't breathe. So I think that's another fear on top of pain. The fact that you, when that happens to you, you can't breathe. It just, it's very stressful because you're like, I'm in pain, but more importantly, I'm having crazy anxiety because I need oxygen.
That's a really good point, actually. Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Another sigh.
It's so calculated. Oh, it's terrible.
It is. It's.
Yeah.
It's a terrible, but
like literally a militant group, and the fact that you don't have communication with your family to let them know that this is happening because someone's monitoring your phone calls, like what?
Yeah,
right. Because then imagine you're having to go through a whole auditorium where you're being humiliated, you're being hit also by not only your peers but people who you look up to, some counselors, people who are supposed to be quote unquote in charge, and then when you call your parents up, they're sitting right next to you. You don't be punched. You don't want to be punched again.
Exactly. Ugh.
Yeah. This honestly goes to show, like, the power of authority and the mob mentality people have when they come together, because they start to think that things are normal. Like, it's a way of, like, justifying, like, how Hitler was able to, like, gain such a huge following and convince all these people that what they were doing in the concentration camps was okay. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just how people who are, like, ruthless dictators, ruthless leaders can band people together because this is human because nature.
Yeah.
Like, when there's authority. Like, they show this in the Stanford prison experiments. Happens time and time again, and it's awful.
They just always use people who are very vulnerable because they're easy targets. We're going to talk a little bit later about the FBI. But before this, let's talk about this even sadder part of the episode, which was this death of this lovely, who seemed to be a lovely 15-year-old who had been sick for a really long time, and they refused to give her treatment because they do not believe in Western medicine.
It's like, just so, and they're like, you won't die if you believe, you're willing yourself into this.
It's your fault.
Are you kidding me?
That's, it is craziness. Your fault. That is insane. That was the worst part to me.
Yeah.
That they're blaming.
Like, it's all in your mind. What? You should have skeletal cancer. Okay.
Yeah.
I know. Ugh. One of the tactics they used to help her were baths.
Oh, yeah. Epsom salts. Yeah.
Which is really nice and relaxing, but she does not need to be relaxing.
Yeah,
she needs to be seeing
food, music. Yeah. Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's like my biggest.
This is not a spa. Like, yes. Please. Yeah. And again, they were saying it was her fault. They were making her, when she could barely walk, so they're making her sit down. Just basically torturing the poor girl because she's sick and it's her fault, apparently, according to them.
She said, please take me to the hospital. She said multiple times, please take me to the hospital.
They finally did.
The day before she died.
Her last day on earth, they finally did. Why do you think that is?
I don't know.
They get rid of the burden of responsibility. It's on the hospital at that point.
That's true.
Exactly. That is why, because they probably were at this point like, she's going to die. We're going to have
an investigation.
Exactly. Dead 15-year-old on our hands. We don't want that. Bring her to the hospital. Oh, this is what, you know, they're safe in a way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We come to find out that she had a cancer that could have been prevented because they had, if treated well, had between 60 and 80% chance of survival.
Yeah, which are decent odds.
Those are decent odds, especially for cancer. Like that, yeah, she definitely didn't have to be through in that much agony.
Exactly, and it's like the pain aspect. Like even if she, you know, God forbid, were to not make it, like at least she would have things that were not causing her that much pain, but they didn't do anything for her.
I mean, baths, as we mentioned.
Yeah, oh, the baths.
Wonderful
just,
baths.
Just awful.
Just awful. But going back to the survivors that we talked about a little bit earlier, after we have that whole emotional scene of them talking about their different paths, things that had happened to them, we follow Carl and his brother, so Elijah and his brother, as they walk into the FBI. I was kind of disappointed the cameras weren't allowed to go in there.
Yeah,
but
makes sense. Still, I wanted it.
Yeah.
I
wanted
to see it.
I wanted it too, but I feel like it also, I was like, okay, this is a documentary. This is not, thank you. It's not a reality TV show.
Right.
I'm not, It's produced to a certain extent to see, in order to put this show together, but I'm having a lot of faith in this, that I see no production in terms of getting certain sound bites, as you see producers are trying to force people to do certain things, which I really appreciate. Do you guys agree with that?
I do. I mean, I've said this last time I was on. I love Elizabeth Vargas. Mm-hmm. I think she does a phenomenal job interviewing and being respectful about things while still really digging deep and getting that story out in a way where it's like her, you can tell her guests feel comfortable being vulnerable with her. I just respect and admire her so much for how she does that.
It's very compassionate. Like, everyone they have on there, like, the cool experts and sociologists and Elizabeth, the host, it seemed very compassionate. And they're not trying to make it into this, like, they're not sensationalizing it. It's, like, very sort of cut and dry, raw, real. It's obviously to spread awareness instead of to just, like, entertain.
Exactly. And often when it comes to those interview parts that we see, they don't want producers' voices in there. They want you to be telling a story and reiterating, because as soon as you see a producer, as soon as you see any crew, anything behind the scenes, it takes you out of the story. Therefore, it does not captivate an audience as much as it could. Yet, when it comes to, and so when those interviews are happening, if you say a certain thing where it doesn't make sense without the question, they will have you reiterate in production. They'll be like, okay, can you please reiterate that? Make sure you say it in the first person. Mm-hmm. I really appreciated it, though. It created that distance. They had the subtitles with the producer asked this, because you can't replicate that emotion. You, on top of having these people pull their hearts out and tell everything they've been going through, having them to play this little camera role, I think would have been too much.
I agree. I definitely agree with that. And it's like, you don't want to make them relive it and say it any more times than they have to.
Exactly.
So I think that the producers and everyone like involved in the show does a really great job of being respectful of the stories.
I agree as well. And I really hope the FBI does a good job with this and all the evidence that they've been given to move forward with this. As we move forward into this episode, do you guys have any final thoughts before we head into our special segment?
The only thing that we didn't touch on, we touched really briefly on it, but after Shaquante's death, they not only made them fast for 90 days, but they also cut off all communications between the different
states,
churches, states, organizations, which I thought just totally reiterated the fact that it's all about control.
It is, and that was, again, going back to earlier in the episode, as we discussed, just breaking that communication is just isolating more. People are starting to have doubts. Oh, let's cut that. If they're not talking, then people are not going to have doubts. And we can come back with new theories, as you explained, Taylor, that we have daughters that die 3 times, and it's all part of life.
Just making it up as we go. Try to keep the story straight.
Exactly. I really hope these people find justice. Let's move into our special segment that Taylor has prepared for us. It's a segment where we discuss celebrities or people who have some sort of notoriety who have some ties with this cult, which today is United Nation of Islam. So, Taylor, what'd you find for us?
Okay, so there actually weren't any huge celebrities that were involved in this one, because the United Nation of Islam only has a few hundred members. What a lot of people, I think, get it confused with is the Nation of Islam without the United in front. It's a completely different organization, and it has 20,000 to 50,000 members, I believe. So it's on a quite a bit larger scale. And Malcolm X actually used to be the leader of the Nation of Islam, and they also were kind of about empowering African Americans. So it's a similar-ish thing, but I believe the Nation of Islam has also controversy, but more legitimacy. But I think that it's kind of went a little bit crazy since Malcolm X left, because they now study Dianetics, which is the same kind of scripture or whatever that Scientologists study. And Muhammad Ali and Snoop Dogg used to be part of the Nation of Islam, not the United Nation of Islam.
Big difference.
Big difference, which I thought... It's so weird how the names were so similar, and they had sort of similar goals, but they definitely were different. Were different things.
Well, good to know.
Just to be like 100% clear, so no one confuses this with Islam itself. United Nation of Islam, Nation of Islam has nothing to do with Islam itself.
Right. All very different.
Completely different.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the worst when people put everything under the same umbrella and start making accusations or start making some kind of conclusions out of very small facts. So, again, very important we make those distinctions because they are very, very important distinctions. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we do the celebrity special segment is also just to highlight how important it is to these extreme cults and beliefs to have just a face, and how sometimes as a society we see people who have some celebrity to them that you're like, oh, whatever they do, I should have dared to. And this special segment is very important to us because it shows you that everyone's human, so don't look right and left before you move forward. Just do your research. Don't hop into anything just because you see someone that you admire in there, because you never know. Let's move in to our new segment.
Let's do it.
AfterBuzz TV News.
AfterBuzz TV News.
I literally love the little intro for this.
It
makes me feel like a legit newscaster. We touched on the fact in the actual episode that Kendra Ross has recently won her court case, and she got $8 million because when she was 11 years old, since like 2002, she had to cook, clean, and do childcare for these businesses that was essentially human trafficking because they didn't get paid or anything. I also looked up some more things about her and learned some more facts about her that I'd like to share with all of you guys. So she was also ordered to marry another member of this cult at age 20, which I thought was interesting because we talked kind of about like child brides in the previous episodes. And even though she was a little bit older, like forced marriages is never okay. Mm-hmm. Never a good thing. So I thought that was really interesting. The fact that she won $8 million is actually very historically significant. The amount is believed to be the largest amount awarded to a single plaintiff in a case of coerced labor, which I thought was super interesting. So, breaking it down, almost half of the $1 million that she got was for restitution. $2.92 million was for emotional distress. $3.37 million was for punitive damages. And $1.2 million were for racketeering damages and unpaid overtime. So that's what kind of adds up to get the $8 million figure that she got. And also, this doesn't have to do with her case, but I learned that Royal Jenkins has 13 wives and 20 children across the country.
Busy man.
And that I was kind of interested that they didn't touch on that in the actual episode.
Yeah, I wonder if the children I wonder if the children were trafficked as well. Like, if his actual biological children had to do the same thing that his other children. Like, I doubt it.
Oh, you doubt it?
I doubt it. I don't think so. I really don't.
I disagree because they're supposed to show an example. And at least from what we saw from previous episode, this is a granddaughter, I believe, of the
Children of God cult.
Exactly. Yeah. She had to endure the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Surprising.
I guess it could go either way, though, honestly.
Yeah.
Very true.
I'm sure that Ronald Jenkins doesn't have to work in a restaurant.
Very true. They didn't mention that when Carl and Elijah got that call that they were going to heaven, that it was his first wife who called.
Oh, that's true.
I was like, oh, first, okay, first of how many? But the fact
13.
That the fact that they didn't even mention 13, that was a big thing. So
these need to be like two-parters at least. Exactly. Because there's so much more I want to know.
I know. Well, that's why we thank Taylor for doing her research. On top of watching the show, she's been really searching things online, as have we. Because there's so much out there, and just like go down the rabbit hole, get informed. It's the most important thing in life. Just always get informed. Know your facts. I think it's time for us to... We're not really going to do... We'll call it... Let's do predictions. We're going to call it predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV.
Predictions. I called it predictions because I just wanted that nice jingle for our YouTube videos viewers. We also like the lights. But if you watch any AfterBuzz shows... Predictions are usually a time for us to theorize on what's to come. Specifically with this show, we're not going to theorize because it seems a little inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to have a guessing game here because there's no room for a guessing game. However, they kind of talked about what is to come for next week. So Taylor, explain to us, what's the call we're talking about next week?
So we're talking about the World Peace and Unification Sanctuary, which I believe that I actually have seen photos of this circulated online, but I wasn't exactly sure where they came from. Have you guys ever heard of this one?
It has the most beautiful name ever, yeah, honestly. It does. Like, let me join. Right? No, I'm kidding.
No.
But
we know better.
It's a beautiful name.
Yeah, it's convincing.
That marketing is very important, as we always discuss week after week.
Yeah. And it looks like this is mostly targeting the Korean community. Mm-hmm. That's what it kind of looked like from the previews. And I looked it up on Wikipedia really fast. And I know the pastor, minister, whoever's the head of it, is from South Korea and now resides in Pennsylvania, I believe. So I think it's sort of in America, but like this one targeted the African-American communities. This one targets the Korean communities.
Wow. And there were so many guns. We saw a lot of people who were supposedly... in church, we don't necessarily be calling it church, but just in some sort of gathering of faith, and they're all holding guns. I've never seen anything like that. It's very surprising, especially when you're just, the messages don't click to
it's
me.
It's jarring, especially when it's the Peace and Unification Sanctuary and there's guns everywhere. That seems really, really counterintuitive.
They're all wearing crowns and holding, and they're not like small guns, they're like huge assault rifles, weapons.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that one's going to be really chilling. And then on top of it, it seemed, it was a quick preview, they put this little teaser together. It seemed that one current member was going to be just having an interview and talking about it. I could be wrong because it was really, really quick. So if I'm wrong about that, please don't get upset with me. That's what I understood, because we had the interviewee, the journalist, talk to someone. Did you guys get to see that snippet?
I got to see the snippet, but I didn't even think that that was what that could be. But that would be really interesting. That would give us a very different perspective.
Right. So I don't – if that is – if I'm right with this, this is going to be a game changer in terms of this whole series.
Right.
Because we've never had this anything like this before. And I don't – and also makes me a little nervous, because if that's a fact – are they seeing it as promotion, and are they seeing it as a way to lure people in? Because that's the last thing we want to do with this show.
Right.
So maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right, but we'll have to wait and find out until next week.
Wow.
In the meantime, guys, where can people follow you on social media or any other shows that you do after Buzz? Where can people keep up with you?
Sure, you guys can find me on Twitter at @Alphaba_Anne, on Instagram at @Taylor_Gates_. I also host the 100 After Show, usually Tuesdays at 10. We were off this week, which is why we're here at 10. I'm also going to be hosting the Younger After Show, Wednesdays at 10 o'clock, and Law & Order SVU, Thursdays at 8. Very busy.
Hey everyone, I'm Mina. You can catch me on Instagram at @MinaMakesMagic. You can also follow me on the Genius panel, where we talk about the life of Pablo Picasso. And I'm going to be doing a new show called The Proposal, Mondays at 8 p.m. So if you're a fan of the Bachelor franchise, this is definitely the show for you.
Wow, very exciting stuff. You can follow me on Instagram at @BonjourJuliet. I do the Botched After Show, so if you want something completely in a different genre that's lots of fun, that deals with transformation and a new life, so that's a commonality that we see with this show, make sure to follow that. It's a really, really fun show. Until next time, guys, we will see you next week. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz, see you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.